Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, text number 8. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Vishvakshena katasuya. Vishvakshena katasuya. Nor padayad yadi ratim. Shrama eva hikevalam. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Vishvakshena katasuya. Nurpadayadyadivatim. Shrama eva hikevalam. Others. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Katasuya. Vaishnavis. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Vishvakshena katasuya. Dharma, occupation. Svanushtita, executed in terms of one's own position. Pumsam, of humankind. Vishvakshena, the personality of Godhead. Plenary portion. Katasu, in the message of. Ya, what is. Na, not. Upadayat, does produce. Yadi, if. Ratim, attraction. Shrama, useless labor. Eva, only. He, certainly. Kevalam, entirely. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. Purport. There are different occupational activities in terms of man's different conceptions of life. To the gross materialist who cannot see anything beyond the gross material body, there is nothing beyond the senses. Therefore, his occupational activities are limited to concentrated and extended selfishness. Concentrated selfishness centers around the personal body. This is generally seen amongst the lower animals. Extended selfishness is manifested in human society and centers around the family, society, community, nation, and world with a view to gross bodily comfort. Above these gross materialists are the mental speculators who hover aloft in the mental spheres. And their occupational duties involve making poetry and philosophy or propagating some ism with the same aim of selfishness limited to the body and the mind. But above the body and the mind is the dormant spirit soul, whose absence from the body makes the whole range of bodily and mental selfishness completely null and void. But less intelligent people have no information of the needs of the spirit soul. Because foolish people have no information of the soul and how it is beyond the purview of the body and the mind, they are not satisfied in the performance of their occupational duties. The question of the satisfaction of the self is raised herein. The self is beyond the gross body and subtle mind. He is the potent active principle of the body and mind. Without knowing the need of the dormant soul, one cannot be happy simply with emolument of the body and mind. Seems like I left out of the there, huh? Simply with the emolument. Okay, anyway. The body and mind are but superfluous outer coverings of the spirit soul. The spirit soul's needs must be fulfilled. Simply by cleansing the cage of the bird, one does not satisfy the bird. One must actually know the needs of the bird himself. The need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord. And any occupational activity which does not help one to achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is said herein to be simply a waste of time. This is because other occupational duties, whatever ism they may belong to, cannot give liberation to the soul. Even the activities of the salvationists are considered to be useless because of their failure to pick up the fountainhead of all liberties. The gross materialists can practically see that his material gain is limited only to time and space, either in this world or in the other. Even if he goes up to Swargaloka, he will find no permanent abode for his hankering soul. The hankering soul must be satisfied by the perfect scientific process of perfect devotional service. Om Aginatam Ananda Shah Jinanjana Shalakaya Chakshunam Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So, what a masterpiece of a purport, right? So Prabhupada's saying here, and it's in the translation, it's saying that those occupational duties which do not provoke an attraction for hearing the message of the personality of Godhead are only so much useless labor. The idea is this, that human life is meant for going back to Godhead. It's an opportunity for going back to Godhead, right? So whatever we're doing, you know, as human beings, it should be something that's helping us make progress towards that goal of going back to Godhead. It's just like if you get admitted into a college or university. It's meant for you getting an education. And it's meant that you're supposed to get an education and get a degree. You can do other things. You know, you could play a sport. You can be part of a club. You could do, you know, there's other things you could do, mess around with your friends. But your primary purpose in being in that educational institution is to get an education and get a degree so you can get out there and do what you've got to do. Okay? Same thing. Human life is, it's like being and going back to Godhead school. It's meant for the purpose. Just like when you go to college, it's meant, the purpose is get an education. Human life is meant to go back to Godhead. It's meant for that purpose. So, you know, people do all sorts of different things, but the whole idea is everything we're doing is supposed to help us make progress towards that goal of going back to Godhead. And that's what this verse is saying here, is that any activity that a person performs, which does not help him, does not, as Prabhupada says in his purport here, evoke our divine consciousness, it's a useless waste of time. Useless waste of time. Maybe unlike being in college, it's not so hard. You know, you can mess around and still wind up to, you know, getting, passing your courses and getting a degree and etc. But going back to Godhead is more difficult. So basically, it requires a full effort. And proper utilization of every moment you have at your disposal, because you can't afford to mess around. It's kind of like it's a big achievement. So that's why it's said here that anything you're doing, if it's not going to help you evoke your divine consciousness or provoke your attraction for hearing the message as personality regarded, it's a waste of time. Shouldn't be doing it. So as I mentioned, this is school. You know, in general, human life is like going back to Godhead school. And ISKCON is meant exactly for that purpose. You know, going back to Godhead. So just like in a school, you have to take different courses. You know, you have to take this, like, even if you're going to be like a lawyer or a doctor, still you have to take these prerequisite courses in the first 2 years. In your freshman and sophomore year, you have to take all these required courses, math and English literature and bio, whatever it is, you know. It's been a long time for me, but. And then when you pass those, so the same way in Krishna consciousness, you know, there's required courses, and they're meant to help us, you know, get a foundation. And we got to do well in those courses. They're there to help us. So the courses are Mangalarti course, you know, and then there's Tulsi course, and then there's Japa course, and then there's Guru Puja, you know, like that, greeting the deities. So all these things are there to help us, you know, further our education, see, our Krishna conscious education. Okay? And once again, just like, continuing that analogy of in school, when you graduate, let's take college, okay, even when you graduate college, if you want to go on to graduate school, they have what's called the GRE. I never got that far, but actually when you graduate high school, they had the SATs, Standard Achievement Test, or something like that. And what they do is, even, you know, you've done all the courses and everything, and you still have to take that test, and how you do on that test will determine whether you get to go, you know, what kind of college you're going to be able to get into, or the GREs will determine whether or not you get into graduate school, and if so, what kind of graduate school you're going to get into. You know, they look at the results of these exams. See? So in the same way, as devotees, there's a final exam for us too. Just like that's kind of like a final exam. Even despite the fact that you've done all the courses and you got all your papers and grades and this and that, you still have to go for that, and then you have to do well on it in order to go on. So in the same way, there's a final exam for those persons who are trying to go back to Godhead. That's the time of death. At the time, just like, you know, when you sit for the SAT or the GRE, whatever you know, you're going to be tested on. See, in the same way, at the time of death, whatever we've actually, progress we've actually made, that's going to be spiritual advancement we've actually made, will be tested at the time of death. There's a Bengali saying, bhajan kore sadan koro morte janilai, which means that whatever bhajan, whatever sadhana, whatever devotional activities you performed, how much you really learned will be tested at the time of death. Our Krishna consciousness will be tested at the time of death. Just like your education, what you've actually learned. I mean, you can, you know, be there and go to all the courses and not learn anything. So in the same way, you can be in the movement and really not absorb it, and, you know, not really assimilate it. So it's all tested at the time of death, how what our actual Krishna consciousness is. And just like when you, if you graduate a university, you get a degree. But if you graduate this college or university, you get a spiritual body, a little bit better. You know, so if you pass the final exam, the time of death is the final exam. If you do well on that final exam, if you're actually Krishna conscious at the time of death, if you can remember Krishna at the time of death, as that verse go, yam yam bapi smanam babam tyajate anti kalevanam tad tadi viti kunteya sadatad baba baba. That whoever remembers me at the time of death, you know, at the time of quitting the body, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. You go back to Godhead. You know, if you're Krishna conscious at the time of death, you go back to Godhead. You get a spiritual body. You get you don't get a new one. I mean, your original spiritual body is revived, and you will appear before Krishna in either one of the Vaikuntha planets or in Goloka Vrindavan in your original spiritual form, right? Ready to do service like that. So, yeah, so it's a good idea to always remember that. That's what's going on here. You know, we're trying to prepare ourselves for going back home, back to Godhead. And Prabhupada has set things up. Everything, you know, I have a friend, some of you may know, his name is Madhavendra Puri. He's, devotee in our movement. And he used one word once we were in a conversation in relation to the morning program. He said, he referred to it as sacrosanct. Sacrosanct. So if that word, it's a combination of two words. It means sacred and sanctified. And he referred to all the different parts of the morning program as sacrosanct, which means it's just perfect. They're sacred and they're sanctified. And it's, you don't touch it. It's perfect. You know, it's Prabhupada. It gave us, he kind of, just like it said about the six Goswamis, Nana, Shastra, Vachadanai, Kanipano, Sadharma, Samstapako, Lokanamita Kadino, Tribhuvane, Manyos, Saranyakaro, to how they scrutinizingly studied all the real scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. That's what the six Goswamis did. So in the same way, Prabhupada, he studied all, you know, he took everything, you know, and he kind of synthesized it. And the program he's given us is like the perfect program for the benefit of all human beings, you know, to help us get them, you know, have the best chance of becoming Krishna conscious. It's not haphazard. It's perfect. Mangal Arti. It's exactly what we're supposed to be doing at that time of the day. Worshipping Tulsi. Chanting Japa. You know, it's been going on for countless millenniums. It's exactly what Vaishnavas are supposed to do. So, you know, should remind ourselves of this. It's not just, okay, you could do this, but you could also do that. No, this is perfect. You know, you've given an opportunity to enter into like the perfect program to help you become Krishna conscious, to prepare you for that time when you know, the moment of death, the big test, you know, and we have the opportunity to go back to Godhead. So, yeah, so it's really good to be very serious about following this program, showing up for Mangal Arti, you know. There's one nice instruction with Papa about Tulsi. It's found in the Anchalila Volume 3. It's in a story about Haridas Thakur. And it's talking about how Haridas Thakur, he used to chant 300,000 names a day. And Papa says, but we can't imitate that. You know, we can't imitate that. That's for a Mukta Purush, a liberated soul. But he says, but we can follow in his footsteps by chanting 16 rounds every day in front of the Tulsi and worshiping Tulsi. And he goes on to say that chanting 16 rounds does not take very long, nor is worshiping the Tulsi plant difficult. He says, simply by doing this, one can become spiritually strong. He says, therefore, we request the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement to follow in the footsteps of Haridas Thakur by doing that. And he said, this process has immense spiritual potency. One should not miss the opportunity. See? So in other words, you get instructions like that, we're supposed to meditate on that. You're supposed to meditate on the words of the spiritual master and just kind of like try to get it to sink in. Prabhupada's saying that that activity of chanting the Hare Krishna, chanting your japa, chanting your rounds, you know, in the presence of Tulsi Devi has great and immense spiritual potency. And he's saying one should not miss this opportunity. So, something to think about. You see? Just like, I remember when I was back in school, sometimes the teachers, in preparation for the final exams, they'd do a review. And during the review, they would give you hints. They would say, actually, this is not going to be on the final. Don't worry about it so much. This is going to be on the final. You know, they tell you that in advance. You know, so it's kind of like in the same way. There's certain things that it's all important. And then Prabhupada, on top of that, in his purports, he gives us instructions as to, you know, what we should really zero in on to maximize our spiritual advancement. So. So we have so many things. And it's not difficult, actually. I mean, that's another thing I was kind of over the last... Sometimes we think, to become advanced, you got to perform great austerity and tapasya. That's good, but not really. I mean, just the other morning I was reading, and I read from the Bhagavad Gita about how Lord Chaitanya has made it very simple for the conditioned souls, you know, in this day and age, just chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And I just, over the last couple of weeks, I just experienced that a few different times. On that day when there was the eclipse, I remember it was supposed to be very inauspicious, so I decided, we weren't going out on Sankirtan straight away, so I decided, well, I guess I'll just, what's the best way to deal with this, you know? I said, well, I'll just come into the temple, you know, during the time of the eclipse, and I'll chant, just like they did when, you know, Lord Chaitanya appeared. There was I think it was a full solar eclipse. And all the people were in the Ganges, and they were chanting Hare Krishna to counteract the inauspicious effect of the solar eclipse. So I thought, okay, my best program is I'll come into the temple during the time of the eclipse. It went from 9 to like 11:44 or something like that. And I'll just chant. So I came in here, and there was already a few devotees in here. And they had a recording of Prabhupada on, and he was just chanting Bandeham and then Panchatattva and then Hare Krishna mantra. And they were chanting along with him. So I just joined in. And I was doing that for like an hour and a half or something like that. And it was so blissful. You know, I was thinking, wow, that's so simple. But it was just blissful, you know. So very easy. And the other night on Harinam, same thing, just Harinam. What's difficult about going on Harinam? But you can get a higher taste just by going out on Harinam and chanting with the devotees. It's not, you know, anybody could do that. And so it's not like you have to be some super this or that in order to get a higher taste. You could be like just a very simple person, and you know, with no particular special talents or abilities or anything like that, but just, you know, join in the kirtan and you can get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And it's really important that we do that. It's important that we participate in these activities, because it's up to us to keep this back to Godhead school open. You know, it's really up to us. I've been to other temples, you know, I've been to many different places, and you know, when the devotees don't participate in the activity, in the morning program and service or whatever, the Harinams, things go down, you know. And, it's like sometimes we take it for granted. We think it's always going to be at least this good here. Well, I hope so. I hope it'll be at least this good, and I hope it'll be better. But you can't take it for granted. You can't take it for granted that the spiritual standard is going to, you know, even if, I'll relax, I'll take it easy, I won't, but things will, no. Everybody counts, and everybody's participation is important, and everybody, to the degree that we don't participate, we're contributing to the downward, whatever you call it, trajectory of the temple and the Krishna consciousness movement. So it's important to participate. You know, there's that expression, charity begins at home. So this is home. Yeah. And something I was thinking about the other day, I mentioned this kind of last night at Nimai's going away party, that the temple is, mean, there's a sense in which the temple is a building. You know, this is the temple. You know? But there's a sense in which the temple's not the building. You know, the temple's not the building. I've been at places. I've been at places where there was a temple, and then they moved the deities. And, you know, and I've been back there after the deities were removed a couple different occasions. And I'll tell you, it was not the same. You know, on that occasion, I could understand, wow, that the temple is not just the building. Because there I was at the same building, you see. I was at the same, it happened when I was in Australia. I was at the same building, but the deities weren't there. You know, the devotional pictures weren't there. The devotees weren't there performing kirtan or anything else, you know. And it was just like spooky. It just felt like, oh, what's this? This is like, you know, nothing, you know. But I think the real thing is the devotees, is the association, and that's the temple. The temple is the combined commitment of like a group of the faith group of the people of the, you know, people who believe in this philosophy and have made the decision to put it. Practice it in their lives, coming together to practice sadhana bhakti together. That's the temple. That's the essence of the temple. See, that understanding is even there in other traditions. You know, I looked up the definition of church. One first definition was a building for public worship, but the second definition was the clergy or officialdom of a religious body. That's getting closer. But then this is the definition I really like. It said, a body or organization of religious believers. See, that was a definition for church. So I'd like to suggest that that's the correct, that's the most relevant definition for the temple. The temple is a body or organization of religious believers, bhaktas. You know, the people who, we have faith in what we've learned from Prabhupada, and we take shelter of it, and we want to put it into practice in our life. That's the temple. That's the temple. More so than the building, than the actual structure. You see? And interestingly enough, even in the Jewish religion, they refer to the temples as synagogues. And that the synagogue is it's a Greek word. It means to gather together. So the same idea is there. You know, the coming together of the people who believe, have faith, and that's the actual, you know, the essence of it, the significant thing. And even one other reference on supporting this point, that in the Krishna book, the word dham, you know, we tend to think of a dham as a place, and it is, you know, Vrindavan, dham, places, and they're special. But the definition in the Krishna book in chapter 2 is the appearance of the form of Krishna anywhere, and specifically within the heart, is called dham. See, so it's more than just being in a, you know, physical location. It's when you're, it's the consciousness is there. It's important as well. So that's an important point. So so following on from that, we should be, you know, we should encourage each other in our devotional activities, and you know, that's very important. And I kind of skipped the point here. I've jumped it ahead. The most important way we could support the temple, you know, is by participating in the devotional activities. That's the, sometimes we think, you know, we tend to think that, and it's easy to do that in the material world, where, you know, conditioned souls, and is, you know, I'll support the temple financially. That's good. That's significant. It's good to support the temple financially. But even more important than supporting the temple financially is supporting the temple devotionally. It's actually participating in the devotional activities. And I'll prove that to you. Okay? I'm going to read a purport from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Is that copy? It's from, where is it? Adi Lila, chapter 9. And I didn't write down the verse, but this is, okay, this is what Prabhupada says. According to the revealed scriptures, if a spiritual master can convert even one soul into a perfectly pure devotee, his mission in life is fulfilled. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur always used to say, even at the expense of all the properties, temples, and mats that I have, if I could convert even one person into a pure devotee, my mission would be fulfilled. See, so he's concerned about getting pure devotees. This is Prabhupada again. It is very difficult, however, to understand the science of Krishna, what to speak of developing love of Godhead. Therefore, if by the grace of Lord Chaitanya, the spiritual master, if by the grace of Lord Chaitanya and the spiritual master, a disciple attains the standard of pure devotional service, the spiritual master is very happy. Okay, now here it comes. This is like the point. Prabhupada says, the spiritual master is not actually happy if the disciple brings money. But when he sees that a disciple is following the regulative principles and advancing in spiritual life, he is very glad and feels obliged to such an advanced disciple. Everybody get that? Not that he's unhappy. He doesn't say that he's unhappy when he brings money. But in other words, the real thing is he's happy. The spiritual master wants to see that the devotees are advancing in devotional service and ideally progressing towards becoming pure devotees. That's what he really wants. And it's so easy to lose sight of that. And we have lost sight of that. Individually, that's up to everybody decide for themselves. But I definitely, as a movement, I believe we've lost sight of that on different occasions and different periods and different places. We've lost sight of that. And it's caused a lot of problems. Am I right or wrong? Prabhupada disciples, am I right or wrong? We've lost sight of that as a movement, that, and, you know, historically speaking, at different points in time and different places, and it's really caused a lot of problems in our movement. So we should try not to lose sight of that, because if we do lose sight of that, to the degree we lose sight of that, what our real purpose is, to try to become pure devotees, then to that degree also we're going to be totally incapable of giving it to others. There's no question of being able to share pure devotional service, an atmosphere or a mood of pure devotional service with people who are coming, if we're not in seriously into that ourselves. And if that's not what we're trying for, then we're not going to be able to, you know, people are not going to feel that when they come. And that's what's attractive. That's what attracts people. People aren't coming here because, oh, you guys got such a nice place, or you got such great food. It's true, we do have a nice place, and we do have good food, but there's plenty of other nice places out there, and there's plenty of, a lot of other nice food out there, too. When they come here, what attracts them is if they can feel that, they can feel that, whoa, these people are into something. They're serious about this, their spiritual life, and it seems like they're getting something out of it. It seems like something's happening. These people are something a little bit different about them, you know? Their enthusiasm, the way, just as if, they pick up on the qualities. They pick up on the qualities that develop when somebody is actually progressing and advancing in devotional service. They pick up on that, and they're attracted by that. They want that. That's why Chris Marsh is here. That's why he came back. Am I right? See? Because they know, I want that for myself, you know? So that's important. Yeah, so as now the point, so it's important for us to, keep, not lose sight of that ourselves. Our main thing of being here is we have to try to progress, try to become pure devotees. I mean, it's a tall order, it's a monumental task, but that's it. That's what, this is a pure devotee school. You know, we're meant to try to make progress towards that, becoming a pure devotee. And so we should, we got to commit and become serious about that for ourselves, and also try to encourage others. That's part of being in a community. That's what the whole purpose of the community is, that we try to encourage each other. And if somebody is encouraging you to surrender more, to come to a better standard of devotional service, and even if it bugs you, it might bug you, because we don't like to hear, we don't like to come out of our comfort zone. We have a certain level of surrender that we feel comfortable with, and if somebody kind of like prods us, pokes us to do a bit more, sometimes a knee-jerk reaction can be like, who do you think you are? Like that. It's a knee-jerk reaction. So false ego, like that. Defending the false ego. But actually, we should understand that person's our best friend. That person's our best friend. The person who's poking us, pushing, prodding us, and you know, whatever, to try to come to a better level of surrender. That's a friend, even if it's something, you know, we don't really want to hear at that point in time, or it's not comfortable. That's a true friend. And I won't say enemy, but, you know, somebody who's not really helping us is somebody who just turns a blind eye and just goes, I don't care. Whatever that happens to that person, I don't care. Let them go to hell. That's not good. You know, it's easier to do that. And we might think that people are doing that, you know, they're not bothering me, but it's better to, you know, to say something. Try to encourage each other, even if it's, you know, you're kind of fearful that it might not be welcome. You could do it in a nice way. If with practice, you'll be able to encourage people without upsetting them. Another point is that another thing we should remember is that human life in general, you're playing for high stakes. You're playing for high stakes. When you get a human body, you're playing for high stakes. When you have an animal body or something lower than a human body, progress or evolution is mechanical. See, like when you're like a fish or a dog, let's say, then your next body after a dog is a hyena, whatever it is. You know, I don't know how. I don't think there's any place where it actually says what body comes after what body. But it's mechanical. You know, if you go down like into the ocean there and you progress from this one to that one to this one to that one to this one. No matter what there's no karma, you know, for an urchin in the sea or something like that. It just lives out that body, and then in the next lifetime it's promoted to the next body and then the next body, and then it comes onto the land and it goes to a bunch, you know, and you eventually come back to the human form of life again. So it's all mechanical. But when you come to the human form of life, then it's all bets are off. In other words, anything could happen. You could you can go back to Godhead. You know, at the end of this lifetime, there's people right here in this room, hopefully, that at the end of this lifetime, they're going to go back to Goloka Vrindavan and, you know, be with Krishna eternally. And there's people who are walking around, not in this room, but, you know, out there on the street that we might see today, who at the end of this body, they're going to be a worm in the stool. You see? So human life in general, you're playing for high stakes because human beings are responsible for whatever they do. You know, we get the reaction. And be honest with you, especially when you come to the Krishna conscious movement, then it's even ratcheted up even more. Because you're interacting with Supreme Personality of Godhead and devotees. So, you know, you can really, I mean, when you come to the movement as a human being in the Hare Krishna movement, then you're kind of like, you're poised, you're right in position to go back to Godhead. And if you're really unfortunate and become offensive and this and that, then you can really mess up your life big time. So, good thing to kind of reflect upon that every now and then, that, you know, this is a serious business. It's it's an incredible opportunity. At the same time, it's serious business. We want to take full advantage of this opportunity of being members of the Krishna conscious movement and not screw up, you know. There's that in the Bhagavad Gita, there's those verses at the end of the 16th chapter talks about how there's three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. And it's saying how every sane man should avoid those, right? So that's screwing up. You know, when if you feel yourself being impelled by lust, anger, and greed, if you acting upon those impulses is messing, you know, is going to cause problems. And what we're supposed to be doing is acharity atmana shreyas, which means engaging in acts conducive to self-realization. You see? So in other words, you can't just be, you know, do nothing. There's that verse in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that all men are forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the three modes of material nature. No one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So it's not that you could just think, well, okay, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to be lusty, I'm not going to be angry, I'm not going to be greedy, I'll just be peaceful. No, you can't be inactive. The soul by nature is active, see? So the way to become, to not become a victim of acting in lust and in anger and in greed, is to use your desire to always try to perform acts conducive to self-realization. In other words, engage. And the topmost acts conducive to self-realization are acts of devotional service, exactly what we got here. This is exactly the perfect program. Getting back to the first point I made in the class, this is exactly the perfect program. If you just plug in to exactly what Prabhupada has given us here and told us to do, then to that degree that you plug in, to that degree, you're not going to have a problem with lust and anger and greed. They're just going to fade out of the picture, fade into oblivion. And you get more and more absorbed in your devotional activities, and you feel yourself, making progress. In Artha Nivritti, you feel yourself becoming free from unwanted material desires and becoming fixed in your service and getting a taste for hearing, etc., 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 on and on and on. So, last point is that I was just listening to a lecture the other day, and this devotee was asking Prabhupada, how do you, if your mind is restless, how do you deal with that? What's the solution to that problem? Prabhupada said, there's only one solution, good association. That's how he answered it. He said, good association. He said, if you're in good association, you'll be able to act properly, and then your mind will be controlled. So good association is really important, and we should really try to take as much advantage as we can of good association. You see somebody who's kind of enthusiastic and fixed up in their service, try to get their association. And don't be, sometimes advanced devotees will, come through and sometimes we don't, you have to take the initiative. Because the nature of advanced devotees is that they're humble and they don't advertise themselves as such. But you have to be intelligent enough to be able to figure out who's an advanced devotee and try to take their association, get the benefit. Sometimes it's easy, if Vaisheshika comes through, so you can see immediately. But there's a lot of advanced devotees around. You have to try to take their association and not be, fooled by the humility. Because that's part of it. I remember once I was distributing books in Delta, and this is about 20 years ago when we were still doing the airport. And I was in Terminal 5, which was Delta back in those days. And I saw this guy, and I thought, I used to start off by giving people a compliment. That was like my opening. So I said, I saw this guy, and I said, sir, I said, you look like an athlete. And he goes, he said, oh, well, yeah, thank you. He said, yeah, I was a bit of an athlete. I said, oh, really? He said, yeah, anyway, what do you got there? So I showed him the books and everything. And I said, easy yoga meditation, but, mostly getting into the philosophy. More than the bending and the stretching. So I showed him, JSD and the SSR, et cetera, et cetera, Bhagavad Gita. And he was looking with interest. And then, so then I got back to that. I brought it back to that first, the compliment again. What's the deal? Were you an athlete or are you? He said, well, yeah, yeah. He said, yeah. He said, I said, I'm Carl Lewis. I said, and I didn't know, I wasn't, big into sports at the time, but I said, wait a second. I said, that sounds, I said, wait, it's Carl Lewis. I said, wait, aren't you a famous athlete? He said, I said, no, wait. He's really just like, really, unassuming. And I said, wait. I said, I've heard your name. I said, you're a gold medalist or something like that, right? He said, oh, yeah, I got a few. It worked out. He won 9 gold medals at the Olympics, 1 silver medal, and 10 world championships. He was like a top, one of the all-time greats in, track athletes. But he was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm just, like an ordinary guy type of thing. Couldn't tell, you wouldn't, if I didn't prod and kind of pull it out of him, you never would have known. So it's kind of like that. You have to just get it out, who the devotees are, and go for it. They're not going to advertise, so you have to try to get that association. So anyway, I think that's all the points I wanted to make. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments about any of this? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, yeah. He took a bunch of books. He took a stack of books, and he gave a really nice donation. And I remember, of course, I always remember that. That was a far out experience. meeting him. Yeah. Yes, Mother. Thank you. That was an absolutely incredible comment. Thank you so much. That was really, wow, that was fabulous. Yeah, so, well, yeah, it's obvious we got to pass the baton. And, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with how it works when in a race, you know, when they have a relay race, it doesn't happen in one spot. You know, it's like, if say it's a 100-meter, 400-meter relay. So there's four guys and they each run 100 meters. And there's an area of about 10 meters. And in that area, they have to pass the baton. So it's kind of like there's a zone, you know. So we've come to that point now. We're in the passing baton zone. And the Prabhupada disciples, like it or not, well, you know, we're going to have to start passing the baton. It doesn't happen. It's not an event. It's not something that happens at one moment because you have to be trained. You know, you have to, like, when you pass the baton, you got to make sure that, you know, the guy that you're giving it to has got it in his hand and, you know, he doesn't drop it. And so it goes over a period of time, but it has to happen. Otherwise, the relay race can't go on. So it's like that. We got to pass the baton on to the next generation. And, for instance, I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. This morning at Tulsi, when it came time for Tulsi Puja, you know, it was an open mic. And I looked around. I'm just looking for anybody who wanted to lead, and nobody seems to want to lead, so I jumped in there. I felt bad. As soon as I stepped up to the mic, I felt, I'm already, I made the announcement, I'm going to, do the 10 offenses. I don't need to do this. Somebody else should do it. But, I don't know, maybe devotees don't feel, what I'm trying to say is feel welcome. If you want to lead a kirtan, step forward and lead a kirtan. We want you to lead a kirtan. We don't want to keep the devotees down. It's not. I don't think that's anybody's mood to, keep. This should be a few leaders, and we're the leaders, and everybody else is just kind of like, Hari Bo Prabhu, No, we want. And this was Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada's mood was not to be like the big grand leader. Prabhupada wanted. He was always empowering. He was trying to get the devotees to come up. Okay, you go there and open a temple, and you go there and take sannyas and preach. And he was always trying to get the devotees. So that's the proper movie. And we want that. I know I want to see that. I mean, we want to see the devotees come up. You want to lead a kirtan? You want to learn something? Yeah, step forward and just express a desire, express an interest. And we'll, I think I speak on behalf of all the Prabhupada disciples. We'll try to reciprocate and, help and just make it all happen. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Okay. One last one and then we'll stop. Parvata. John. So I'm going to end the class just by reading that one sentence one more time. It's ended on a perfect note from the CC purport. The spiritual master is not actually happy if the disciple brings him money, but when he sees that a disciple is following the regulative principles and advancing in spiritual life, he is very glad and feels obliged to such an advanced disciple. Jai. Grunthrad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.